So those of you who don't know me,
I was going to say, my name is Suzanne Espinosa. I am the present CEO of Transformation Enzyme Corporation, and we host TransferWisdom. And tonight, we have, and I'm going to read your credentials because it would be a tongue twister if I didn't. So Meryl Macrodge is a certified functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner. Say that five times fast. She founded her business called Functional Health Associates with a simple but powerful philosophy that addressed the root cause instead of chasing symptoms. And I love what she's done. She has two teenagers, and so she is well aware of ADD, hyperactivity, and has been searching, even herself has gone through health challenges, for the alternative holistic methods to achieve health, balance, and harmony probably in the home as well. So with that, I want to steal her thunder because her topic is awesome. I'm going to have her come up, so help me welcome Meryl.
Thank you so much, Suzanne, and I want to thank Transformation Enzymes for hosting me. This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, and I think we can all agree that the opioid crisis, it's been in the news a lot, it is really a modern-day scourge on our society, and as a healthcare practitioner, and I know there are practitioners here as well, I speak for all of us in that we really want to be part of the solution. And I see my role in this, my part in this, as twofold. One is I have my Brain Cam program, and we're going to talk about that some, and that's in my office, and I help people with chronic pain with that. But the second role that I feel I have is just in terms of giving information to folks and empowering them. We have learned so much about pain and how pain happens in our body and the brain's role in pain. And this is information that can help people begin to help themselves. And I feel very passionately about empowering others to take control of their health and help themselves as well.
Okay, so this talk is for anyone experiencing chronic pain or for anyone caring for someone in pain. And I have to confess that up until a few years ago, I wasn't really that keenly aware of just what chronic pain does to a person, what it does, how it affects them, how it affects their life, how it affects their loved ones and their whole situation. And it really came home to me when my mother, who is about 75, she's a very active person, you know, being in her 70s, she is driving still, she's taking care of the home, my dad and my younger sister who is special needs, she and my dad started a nonprofit organization for her needs, and she hosts, you know, church groups at her house, and she's, you know, going to lunch with friends. She's a very active person, walks every day, and we're so blessed. But one day she woke up with pain from head to toe, out of nowhere. And suddenly, she wasn't going to go to lunch, she wasn't going to drive anybody anywhere, she wasn't going to make dinner. She had to figure out how she was going to get herself out of bed. You know, she had overwhelming fatigue and just pain everywhere. And this went on for a few days, and she eventually, you know, went to the doctor about it, but at first she thought maybe it would resolve, but it didn't right away. And so on top of the pain, then in creeps a little bit of fear. You know, wait, how long is this going to last? When is this going away? Is this going away? Is this the new normal for me? Is this my life? You know, so there's a little bit of fear that comes in. Now, thankfully, it has a happy ending. You know, she went to her doctor, and there were things they could do, and they mostly resolved. I would say 99% is resolved, and this was a few years back, and she went back to her regular life. But for that period of time, you know, people were taking care of her. I mean, her life ground to a halt. And so I became keenly aware at that point of just what this means for people in their lives and what it means to their loved ones as well. So does anybody here, do you have experience in chronic pain yourself or a loved one? Yeah, it's very common, all too common. So tonight you will learn the true root cause of pain, and it's not what you think. The Secret to Interrupting the Chronic Pain Cycle, and My Top Three Strategies. So, Suzanne mentioned my background is in functional diagnostic nutrition, and many of y'all are aware of the functional approach and how that seeks to identify and resolve the root cause of issues versus symptom management, which right now the opioids are all about symptom management, and there's a time and a place. I'm not completely anti-pharmaceutical for sure. There's a time and a place, but things are not going to get better until we get to the root. So just a few numbers. These are surprising to me. 100 million Americans affected by chronic pain. That is more than diabetes, heart disease, and cancer combined. And think about all the research and funding and things that go into those. 90% of Americans will have back pain at some point in their lives, and out of those folks, for 30% of them, it becomes chronic. There's 80-plus autoimmune diseases for which pain is a major symptom, and 5 million people are estimated to have be affected by fibromyalgia. Opioids are the third most prescribed drug, the first two being antidepressants. It's a sorry statistic right there. And the most shocking one, 22,000 deaths annually because of involving prescription opioids. And that's equivalent to 62 deaths per day. That's shocking. So what is pain? So pain, acute pain, is the pain that we feel when we injure ourselves, burn ourselves. We all are familiar with acute pain. It's actually a friend to the body because it brings our attention to the situation at hand and causes us to take corrective action. So we've got a finger on the stove, we're going to take it off the stove. We might put it under the faucet, might get a little lavender oil, whatever it is that's going to help us out. We sprain our ankle, we're going to stay off the ankle for a little while. Acute pain is helpful to us. Chronic pain, on the other hand, occurs after at least 3 months and in the absence of appropriate stimuli where this pain is just ongoing. So these are a couple of studies, but there's a lot out there that are super interesting, but here's two that I just wanted to share. So this one up here on top, the one up here on top is a study where they took a bunch of asymptomatic people, healthy people, and they imaged their backs. And what they came up with was, as you can see, 37% of 20-year-olds had degenerating discs, and 90% of 80-year-olds. And it was similar for bulging discs and several other things that they looked for. Now, I will repeat, these people did not have pain. They were completely asymptomatic. So, you know, when we have pain and we go and they image it and they go, oh, you have a bulging disc. We say, well, that's the reason my back hurts. Thank goodness, I know now. Is it the reason for back hurts? We have to think about that. So this study down here is interesting. It has to do with whiplash and the questions around whiplash. Like, why is it that some people get whiplash and some don't? Why is it prevalent in the United States? And then there's some other countries that have similar driving, similar accident records, and they don't have whiplash. So this particular study, they did like a fake accident. They simulated an accident. And before the accident, before the person participated in this, they had them fill out a survey with lots of different parameters on there. And so afterwards, after they had the fake accident, some of those people said, I've got whiplash. And so then they went back and they looked at their surveys. And so they found that the people that were reporting things in their lives that were stressful had a higher incidence of reporting whiplash from this fake accident than the people that didn't have such stress going on. So that's really interesting. So, what's going on? Imaging studies poorly correlate with pain, as we saw. Whiplash incidents are prevalent in some countries, but not others. Pain sometimes seems to come and go, or migrate. Tissues heal from injuries within 6 weeks, but pain continues for some and not others. Childhood trauma increases the incidence of chronic pain in adulthood, which has been studied and it's a fact and it's just a difficult thing. And some pain has no clear origin at all. So here we have the brain. And here's the thing, pain is a decision. All right, so we've got the finger on the stove, but it's really not the finger that's telling us it hurts. The information is traveling up to our brain, and our brain is processing this with all the information that it can bring to bear, and it's deciding that this finger is in danger, and so it's sending us a signal that there's pain so that we will take corrective action. So this part up here is like the thinking brain. We've all known a lot about that. We talk a lot about this part, which is the part of the brain. It's not fully developed. A lot of judgment, decision-making goes on in that brain. Not fully developed until you're in your mid-20s. That's why all the teenagers are jumping off roofs and all of these things. So, and she's right. I have two 15-year-olds now, so. And then, you know, we've got this part of the brain here. It's a more primitive part of the brain. It's not the thinking brain, it's more the unconscious brain. This is where our autonomic nervous system is handled, and things like heart rate, digestion, taken care of by this area down here, memories, smell, things like that are happening here. This is the area that would decide whether we're going to be in a sympathetic state, a fight or flight state, or if we're going to be in more of a parasympathetic state, rest, digest, and heal. And this right here is special. It's labeled as ACC, and that's anterior cingulate cortex. So it's basically a bridge between the thinking brain and the unconscious brain. And what's interesting about that is that on imaging studies, it lights up when a person is experiencing pain. And interestingly, this is whether it's physical pain or mental, emotional pain. It lights up. So this is the area that basically is taking all the information from our thinking brain and all the information from our unconscious brain, all the memories and emotions and all of that, bringing it together and coordinating the response that our body is going to have and the decision on whether or not something is going to be painful. So there's all these things that go into the pain decision that the body, the brain is processing, all this information coming in. So, of course, we do have our senses, so what we're feeling, smelling. We have the stress level, like we said. So, and that can be for many number of reasons. Social isolation, sleep deprivation, turmoil. Our thoughts enter into this. So going back to the studies that they did on whiplash, if whiplash is a common thing in a society, it's a thing where we all know about it and half of us expect that that'll happen if we're in a car crash, we're at a much higher incidence to experience pain from whiplash than a country where it's not a thing. Nobody talks about it. Nobody's ever really heard of it. So that's part of our cultural influences, our beliefs, our thoughts, our memories and past experiences. So people who have had a difficult childhood, that can come to bear when the brain is deciding whether or not a situation is painful. Our emotions. So are we afraid? Are we sad? Are we happy? These are all things that are brought to bear, as well as our nutrient status, anything in our physical body. Inflammation is huge, and things going on with us physically. So speaking of emotions, there is a cycle that we sometimes find ourselves in. This is the fear-pain cycle, and that is where, and my mother, I think a lot of people that have pain find themselves in this cycle, and that's where you have pain, and then later on some fear creeps in from that pain. And then because the body is fearful and that's being processed by the brain and that has physiologic results in the body, then it exacerbates the pain, and that causes us to be more fearful. And ultimately, our body is stuck in this sympathetic fight or flight state, and it has a hard time healing. So, the homunculus, this is, I thought, a really interesting thing. I'm sure you've seen this, Susie.
Yeah.
There is a physical area on our brain that represents every place on our body. And the geography that is represented by the body item on the brain, the size of that is represented by the density of the receptors of that place. So you have, like, your hand is really big, but your shin is really tiny. And your tongue is really big. So what's interesting about this is that this can change, like the amount of space that any body part can take up on your brain can change over time, depending on what's going on. So a person that reads Braille, for instance, the space on their brain that represents their fingertips would be really big. And if you have pain in a certain place, the space that it takes up on the brain also would enlarge, because we bring our attention to that area. So some things like smudging, they call it smudging, can occur where there's a place that overlaps another place. So you can begin to imagine why it could be that pain can migrate or seem to be someplace and another place tomorrow. Then you can also imagine why something like phantom limb pain is, it's real, it's obviously real, but the place in your brain still exists, even though that limb might be gone. So how is it that these things can happen? How can that area grow or change over time? Well, neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to reorganize itself by forming new neural connections throughout life. This is a concept that up until about 15 or so years ago, people didn't really think that the adult brain could do this. They really just thought it was the wee ones, you know, in the early years. And then after a while, that was like as good as it was going to get. It was all downhill from there. But that's not true at all. And we know now for certain that our brains are constantly remaking itself. Constantly we're forming new connections and making new neurons. It's a constant process throughout our life, which is great. But it's also how pain becomes chronic. So in that case, it's not so great. And that's because we can establish these pathways in our brain. And we run that path over and over, and the brain becomes better at it, becomes more efficient. It's going to use these established pathways when they're available and when they think it's, when the brain believes it's appropriate to the situation. So if we've had a rough childhood, we've got some tracks in there already, and they're available. So how do we interrupt that fear pain cycle? How do we interrupt chronic pain? So we want to harness that neuroplasticity to resolve the pain. And the key there is we need to supply the brain with new input to interrupt the pain cycle and establish pain-free neural connections. And it is input that helps the brain form new connections. Input of all kinds, if it's emotional, if it's whatever is in our environment, is going to affect the new neural connections of our brain. So we want to be specific and give it the right kind of information to form new neural connections. So I'll talk a little about Brain Camp, because that's what we do there. That's specifically what we do there. And there are other ways, and I'm going to talk to you about how you can do it yourself. But in Brain Camp, I use Neurosage, which is a therapeutic tool, and it supplies very specific visual, auditory and vestibular information, very specific. And it is all about establishing new neural connections. And this is effective for pain as well as fatigue and balance issues associated with chronic pain. And it also has broader use. We use it with ADHD and many other situations, tremors and issues as well, and mood issues. So these are some of the things. We'll play a testimonial in a moment, but these are some of the things that people have said. You know, I can't believe the hip pain that bothered me for months is now gone. This was after only one time of working with me. But Brain Camp is for a series because we establish a new connection and we establish it more and get it basically into a preferred situation versus the old track. So the old track was this, it ran the pain cycle. The new track, we're going to establish that and get that in there. So I'm so delighted to be walking without my cane for the first time. So this is somebody that came in originally on a walker, and she had neuropathy, and I worked with her some, and she came back, and this time she had a cane, and I worked with her some more, and then pretty soon she didn't need the cane anymore. So another person, I thought I would not be able to knit or ride my bike again, and now I'm back to doing both. Somebody that came in just the other day said to me after we've been working a while, she said, life is so different without pain. It's just so different. You know, I forgot how much fun I like to cook. You know, I can go to the grocery store now and get what I need, and I'm cooking, and I'm playing with my dogs. It's just a completely different situation. So we're going to get into what you can do right now. What can you do for yourself to help your own neuroplasticity and interrupt the chronic pain cycle? So the three things that I'd like to talk about, mind-body lifestyle, we'll talk about that, nutrition, and train your brain. So mind-body lifestyle, safe movement, and this is different depending on where everybody is at. Yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong. Resistance training is really a great thing to do. It does not get enough press, I feel. Great for increasing our mitochondria. It's great for helping with pain. Walking is wonderful. And interval training, if people are, you know, doing aerobics and things like that, interval training is a great way to get your aerobic workout. Nurture your spirit. You know, social connection, pray, and meditate. And we're going to talk about that a little more. Play and laugh, and of course, sleep. All of these things are super important. So we're going to talk about nutrition, but I thought I'd throw in this particular study. Total Western Diet, we're calling TWD, alters mechanical and thermal sensitivity of the lungs, hypersensitivity following complete Fromm's regimen of mice. Okay, so that was a mouthful. But basically, what happened, what they're saying in this study is that the standard American diet actually can increase our pain issues because of the physiology that has to do with our nutrient status. So many of you have seen, you know, slides on nutrition, and so we'll go through some of this and talk about the whys. So first of all, removing sensitivities, artificial ingredients, colors, sweeteners, high glycemic foods, excess calories, and speed. So we want to keep things as steady as we can from a blood sugar standpoint, because those spikes in our blood sugar are going to raise our body's stress level. And we know when we raise the stress level, we're predisposing ourselves for our worst pain. So we need to keep the high glycemic foods down. Oops, let's go back home. I was going to say the speed. There was an interesting study, I don't think I put it up, but an interesting study on how when somebody eats quickly versus how somebody eats slowly. And so this person took 15 minutes. This other person took like 22 minutes to eat their food. And at the end of that, what was interesting is the person that took longer ate fewer calories overall than the person that took 15 minutes to eat their food. And also their inflammatory markers were lower. So the person that took longer, their inflammatory markers were lower than the person that had eaten quickly. So we want to increase our phytonutrients, we want to eat the rainbow, increase high quality proteins and healthy fats, probiotic-rich foods, bone broth. So why would I say that? Does anybody have an idea why I would be highlighting the probiotic-rich foods and bone broth in our, what we want to increase?
As he said, well, the gut and brain are connected, and you know the gut.
Yeah.
And the brain.
Right. Absolutely. So these foods we know are very nurturing to our gut. Okay, the healthier our gut, we know, the healthier our brain, and vice versa. So Suzanne and I were talking a little bit about the gut-brain connection and just how very strong that is, and it is huge. People that have accidents where they hurt their head have a much higher incidence of then coming down with gastrointestinal problems just down the road a bit. It's a huge connection between the two, and the more we can help our gut be healthy, the more our brain is going to benefit, and the more we help our brain be healthy, the more our gut will benefit. That one doesn't get enough press, but it's true. And hydration, of course. And supplement wisely. And so there's so many things in the realm of supplements that we could talk about, and your best bet is to work with a provider to find out what really your body needs and what's going to work with you. But I am going to mention a few of these here, which are very common that I talk with my clients about. So number one is enzymes. Enzymes are great. So number one, enzymes help with digestion. They help us digest the foods. And so again, we're talking about that gut-brain connection. And also getting all the actual nutrients we need into our bodies so that our neural connections and all the messaging and everything is working tip top. The other thing that enzymes do, particularly the proteolytic enzymes, and I know Transformation has done studies in this regard in terms of pain and inflammation, these can really help bring that down in the body. They can help clear away the debris that's no longer needed in an inflammatory situation like an injury. So enzymes are very helpful for pain relief. Magnesium. We talked about magnesium. I'm sure you've heard about magnesium. Most of us are deficient in magnesium. Magnesium is needed for every metabolic reaction in the body. And it also has been shown in studies to lower the cytokines. Lower our inflammatory cytokines when you take magnesium supplementation. Vitamins D and K. Vitamin D has been studied to help with pain, to bring pain down, and vitamin D and K work synergistically, and so I suggest if you're going to take D, then you take the K. EPA and DHA, fish oils. Fish oils, we know, are anti-inflammatory and also really help in the pain situation. And I'll throw curcumin in there as well, because there's study after study. People are loving to study curcumin right now. It is shown to help with pain, cancer, inflammation. The list goes on and on. Resveratrol and other things we can talk about as well. There are many supplements that can be useful for pain. So, I want to mention, we're going to bring meditation in here again. So we're going to talk about training the brain. That was the third thing on my list. And so this is just one of, again, many studies on meditation and its effect on pain. And it's because of its effect on the brain. You know, the person sitting there placid and peaceful, but their brain is really working. I love meditation. So here, I believe he's meditating because he's happy and he looks peaceful. But you can see his brain is getting a workout. So he is training his brain. So these are some of my favorite ways to train your brain. So number one is learn. That is one of my very, very favorite ways to train your brain. And you're all here, and so you all are learning. You're training your brain right now. Just learning how pain works in the body and what you can do about it begins to change the situation. Just learning. And I have a list of resources, a list of books that I'll talk about, and great ways to learn. I had a client who came in one time, and he had been in construction and had been in a couple of accidents where actually he had things had fallen on his head. And you know, his head hurt, his neck hurt, his upper back hurt. And this had been going on for years and years, and what had happened, he was explaining, is that over the years, even though he wasn't doing anything to his head and neck in terms of re-injury or anything, it had become more and more sensitive over time, so that the slightest little touch anywhere would just set off this terrible pain response. And that worried him. He felt like he was getting worse over time, and things were getting structurally worse. And I said, not necessarily. Our brains are very efficient, and they get better at running that track over time, better and better. So we may start out needing this much stimulus to feel this pain, but if we get that stimulus over and over again, the brain's gonna know what to do. Oh, I know, I've got that track, I'm gonna run it. And it takes less and less of that stimulus to run this pain response. And for him to learn that, I mean, the relief on his face was visible, you know? So just learning begins to change the situation. That's one of my favorite ways to change the brain. Other ways, meditation, we talked about that. Prayer, guided relaxation, tapping, affirmations. So all of these are great ways to train your brain and brain camp. That's what we do in class. So here are some resources that I really like. The first one, Healing the Pain Now by Joe Tata. It's a very good book that it's completely for people to use at home. And he also has like an online program that people can do. Unlearn Your Pain is also a really good one. Talks a lot about that unconscious brain and how that is a player in the pain situation. The next two, The Brain That Changes Itself and The Brain's Way of Healing, are by Norman Doidge, the same author. This one is his latest one. They're both fascinating reads. They're about neuroplasticity. And he has gone around and interviewed all these different providers, all these different people with different conditions, and what they've done to help themselves, and devices that are currently being studied to help the brain, and just all based on the fact that our brains are infinitely trainable. So they're very interesting. The Mind-Body Prescription by Joe Sarno is, again, really addressing that unconscious brain and its role in pain, and Wired for Healing as well. I like all of these. So that is Brain Camp. We are going to show a video testimonial of somebody that.
So my name is Nicholas Crouch, and I was in the U.S. Navy for 6 years where I was in IT, and I'll tell you what, man, I had an amazing career going. Picked up rank really fast, did three different deployments, and during my third deployment, which was in 2011, I was on the ship working out and doing a little too much, and I ended up throwing my back out. And when I say throw my back out, I mean it went bad. So. And that pretty much put my career, you know, came to a screeching halt. And after about another 3 to 4 years trying to, you know, get treatment on my back, you know, doctors, it was a grim outlook. And they kept telling me the same thing, you know, that there's nothing they can do, there's nothing that anybody could do, and my back's only gonna get worse. And eventually I ended up getting medically retired, 100% disability from the military. And I was, at that point, I got medically retired at 27 years old. So, still young, I still had my whole life in front of me. I was injured for 6 years, you know, for the last 6 years. And during those 6 years, you know, I went through the med board, went through all these changes, and I ended up, I bounced around between multiple different pain management doctors, multiple different spinal surgeons. I've had a total of 8 rounds of injections in my spine, where every one of those rounds was a minimum of 3 injections. They never helped. They never did anything. And I was told every time by military doctors and civilian doctors that, you know, it's only going to get worse, and there's really nothing we can do for you. my pain management doctor finally said, you know, we're done with the injections, we're done. Like, he couldn't do anything else for me. And so he referred me to the Fondren Clinic in Houston, which is supposed to be one of the best spinal surgeons or spinal clinics in America. And I got a call probably 2 or 3 weeks later from Fondren Clinic saying that none of their doctors would see me because of how bad my back was, that they refused to see me because they wouldn't operate. So they referred me to another doctor who is basically one of the best spinal surgeons in America, if not the world. And I started going to him. He wanted to do a few more injections in my spine just to see if, you know, his techniques would work and could give me some relief. Same results. I got no relief at all. So finally, he told me, we sat down and started talking about surgery. And he told me that out of my spine, that he could only operate on about 50% of my back. And then out of that, he could possibly be able to fix 50% of that. So literally, you know, 25% of my back he could possibly fix. And I was at the point where, you know, I didn't care. Even 25%, you know, if that was better than nothing. Life was tough. I mean, I couldn't do things as simple as reading a book to my son at the end of the day, you know, at bedtime, because all I wanted to do was basically just go down and lay down and go to sleep. Because, I mean, the pain was just so intense. I couldn't even pick my daughter up and hold her for more than, you know, maybe half a minute or so. I mean, it was just a miserable way of life. And after going to other doctors, going to pain management doctors, going to spinal surgeons, you know, trying tons of different treatments, a lot of, you know, total of 8 different injections in my spine, nothing worked. Nothing, it was still the same outlook. There was no hope.
It was one of those things where he was so sick, he would go lay down. He was like, oh, I've got, my back hurts. I need to go lay down. I'm sorry, I can't go to this birthday party with you. I need to go, my back is hurting. We can't go to the carnival, I'm sorry. We can't do this. And it was getting to where we were having to hire yard people because he couldn't mow the yard. And I was so busy with the kids, and because he was hurting, that he couldn't take care of the kids. And it was kind of dark for a little while there, because we were starting to fight because I was doing everything and I was taking care of everything. I felt like almost like a single mom at sometimes, because he was always hurting. Ever since he started coming to see Dr. Daigle, he goes to birthday parties with us. He mows the yard now. He wants to barbecue. He wants to go out and do things with his friends. And we're spending more time together, and it's so much better. I can see him going outside, and he's playing with the kids now, and he's playing baseball, and he's getting involved and helping with taekwondo and dance, and it's a totally different person than what he was. So I feel like I have my husband back. I feel like my kids have their dad back. I feel like we have our marriage back and our family back, and it's great. My kids go in to wake him up in the morning, and I can hear him laughing and giggling. And it used to be they'd come back, Dad's back's hurting. Dad's hurting. Dad doesn't want to get up right now. But now it's giggles and laughs, and we get up and we go to the park and we go to the beach, and we used to not do any of that. So my marriage is back, my family's back, my everything is how it was before he got injured.
I mean, I went from barely being able to walk, barely being able to do much of anything, to being able to play with my kids, pick my kids up and throw them around, being able to read the book to my son at bedtime without being just in excruciating pain or wanting to do nothing more than just go lay down. I was able to do all that kind of stuff. It was amazing. And that was just in 2 months. Within that next month, I'm probably 100% better. And it's continued. I haven't regressed any, and they literally gave my life back. So if you're sitting here and, you know, my story is resonating with you, give them a shot. Give this a chance. You have hope. You can get better, and you will get better if you give them an opportunity.
So So I don't know if y'all heard everything that he said, but basically he hurt his back in the Navy, and he was seeing doctors. They were doing injections. It was inoperable. They wouldn't operate on him because it was so bad. They even, you know, tried specialists and who would not see him because they would look at the imaging and they would say it's just too bad. And he finally found somebody that was willing to operate, but told him that he could only operate on 50%, and out of that he could only help 50% of that. And he was ready to do it, you know, because he needed some relief. And he started working with the neurosage, and things turned around for him. They turned around for his family. And, you know, he now has no pain. And, you know, this was inoperable back pain. And, you know, this was a client of Dr. Daigle. This is the person that developed NeuroSage, and I trained directly under Dr. Daigle. And I have a client also that has inoperable back pain. You know, she's got pins and different things in there. And they just told her, okay, here's medication, here's this and that. You're just going to have to learn to live with it. You're going to have to manage it as you can. And, you know, and she has come and started working with me. She's the one that said, life is so different without pain. You know, life is so different. And so that's what, you know, I saw with my own mom. You know, just when pain gets a hold of somebody, it really stops them in their tracks. And we can make a difference for those folks. You can make a difference for yourself, and we can help others, you know. So that's it. I'm happy to take questions.
Yeah, definitely. Any questions?
So, yeah.
So you talk about chronic pain and inoperable pain, but tell me the type of people that come see you where this makes sense to do.
Right. So it's quite broad, okay? So it just happens that a lot of people that see me, they've tried a lot of other things. So a lot of times they've exhausted, like they can't be operated on, or they, you know, they don't want to be on the drugs anymore, that kind of thing. But it makes sense for people to try this before they have some sort of surgery, you know, oftentimes, especially with back surgery, because we know that the success rate of back surgery is not stellar, you know. I wish it was, you know, but it's not so it makes sense for somebody to try something less invasive. So it would be back pain, joint pain, neuropathy, fibromyalgia, any, you know, pain from MS, Parkinson's, tremors, people with gait issues, all of those kinds of things. I do have several people that see me regarding mood. There's a psychologist that refers her folks to me and says that they're able to progress so much faster working with her if they're working with me at the same time. And so it's more of a psychological pain in that sense. And then I also have ADHD kids, autistic kids, and the protocols are slightly different, but we're still working on the brain. So those are the types of folks that I see.
That's amazing. Typically, how many sessions?
So for pain, a typical to start with is 12. And some people are totally done, you know, at 12, and others decide to go a little further. And if it's a chronic, like if it's a disease state, that a degenerative situation, then they may need to come in every so often just to help them. Because what happens is training the brain is a little bit like walking through a meadow, walking through grass, where you are walking along one time and you turn around and there's not really a track behind you, there's not a path. But if you walk often enough, close enough together, you turn around and there's going to be a path. And that's what we're doing, is we're putting down the new tracks in the brain, and we're reinforcing that and making that the preferred path. And that takes generally some repetition.
And I was going to say, are they weekly sessions? Are they everyday sessions?
Right. So we try to stack them at first quite close together. So three or four times in a week, and then we'll start spacing. So that's how we do it generally.
And arthritis?
Arthritis, yeah. Can benefit from this. Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about tapping and how that works?
So I'm not a tapping expert, but tapping, you know, is working a little bit. It's a little Eastern Western kind of thing. You know, it's using some of the
the acupressure points and things, and bringing the mind to bear on it. So it's trying to use the energy and reinforcing some of the things that we want our brain to be hearing and thinking. So it's trying to reach that unconscious part of the brain and retrain it to be thinking more positive and in the direction that we want it to be. So, and there are lots of good, you know, there's a lot of YouTube, there's a lot of good things online you can find on exactly how to tap and where to tap and what you can say, affirmations and things.